going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Now the puck is dropped. Right wing side, one time shot. They score! Off the right wing, one timer hammered inside the post. On the short side, guess who it is? Yuri Kulik. Kulik gets the one timer, and the Amex take a 2-0 lead.
Amerks, Bandits, Amerks. Good weekend and a long one for us. Welcome back. I'm with a well-known hockey guy. What's the title again? Marty, I've already forgotten.
Goalie guy. Like
to, what?
I'm a goalie guy.
Goalie
expert.
Okay, so that's good because we witnessed the lowest scoring game in the history of the National Lacrosse League.
How is that possible?
We're coming off of Devon Levi being perfect in the back half of Friday's game and perfect yesterday. So yay, goaltending.
Yay, goalies. Let's go. Let's give it up for the goalies. There's some other goalies around the hockey world that would love to have the same success as Matt Vince and Devon Levi.
Oh, you mean the guys who played super late into the wee hours of the morning last night? No.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate.
Rough.
Like Darcy Kemper had probably his best period of his life, and they still lost, you know.
Connor Hellebuck would like to have maybe a little bit of help in his goalie adventures now. But yes, okay.
We've been off since Thursday, so let's dive in here in some sort of order just to maybe keep it on the rails. I don't know. Amerks, let's start with Levi. They are up 2-0 with a chance to wrap up the series against Syracuse on Thursday.
What is one of the key compliment attribute that we always talk about Devon Levi is his focus, his mental approach to the game, right? Yep. And how he resets. He does the Star Wars meditation and on the commercial break, all of that. This is a big playoff for Devon Levi and the Rochester Americans. They're playing Syracuse, a team they've played a million times this year. They know them well. It's a veteran team. And early in the second period in game one, which was Friday, Devon gives up a bad goal to Connor Sheary. And then there's a wraparound type goal right after that. It's 2-0 for Syracuse. And Devon kind of reset mentally. He was really, really good for the rest of that game. Obviously, was good last night, or yesterday, I should say. What time was the start yesterday?
3:00.
3:00. So that's not a matinee, but afternoon-ish. So I think that's the big thing with Devon Levi is that I feel like he's still this raw mold that you can guide into, you know, where you think he will be best suited. Why? Because mentally, he can take it. He can adjust. He can tweak the style a little bit. He can focus. He can forget what just happened and move on to the next. That was a big success for him in college. Sometimes not having a lot of shots, still staying in the game. And now what we saw over the first two games of that Syracuse series was gives up a couple of goals. One was a bad one, was able to reset and move on and then shut the door after that. I think that is one of his biggest qualities, is being able to mentally be focused, reset, and forget about what just happened and move on to the next.
First period yesterday was really, really, really impressive for the Amerks. And then the second period, while navigating a 1-0 lead, a tremendous pushback by the Crunch, unable to score based on Devon Levi. And ultimately, then you start going through the late season list, meaning end of season list of players that got sent from Buffalo back to Rochester. And it's Yuri Kulik, Isaac Rosean, Noah Oslin, Tyson Kozak, and all have had a pretty significant role in this. Let's start with Yuri. Now, Yuri doesn't get the opportunity on the power play late in period number two if Oslin doesn't draw the penalty, and if Anthony Angelo doesn't hit the post seconds before Oslin draws the penalty. Like, it should have been a 1-1 game. It was a tap-in goal. Angelo somehow put it across along the goal line, off the post and out the other side. Everybody was like, how did that not go in? And by the way, I was sitting about 10 rows up in that corner, and I was also how did that not go in? Anyway, and then watch Oslin proceed to draw his second penalty of the game. They win the faceoff and get the Kulik goal. So let's start with Yuri.
Faceoff matters only when they matter, and when there's 18 seconds left in the period and you're on the power play, winning a draw is important. If you lose, they send it down the ice and the period's over. So Josh Dunn wins the draw. Yuri's, we know he's got that one-timer, and I do believe the Sabres have got to start using that on the right side a little bit more on the power play, especially so you would have Tage on the left, Yuri on the right, kind of go one-timer both ends. That would help Rasmus Dahlin. That would help everybody. So I thought that was good. Look, I mean, this is weird to me because I didn't think Yuri Kulik should have been in Rochester for the playoffs. But if he's there now, you got to show, you know, some production at big moments. And I felt like that goal in that time in the situation was huge for him and for the Rochester Americans. So, I've been pleased with Yuri. I still don't think Yuri Kulik is the kind of guy that is going to go out there and take over games, right? He's not going to. Which is okay. He's still a young player, and the AHL is a tough league to play in. But those moments are moments that I absolutely love from Yuri to be able to perform and produce.
Well, masterful job by Coach Michael Leone yesterday of adapting as the game went on, changing some lines. Wahlberg was ill this weekend, so he missed both, and that created another well-earned opportunity for Riley Fiddler Schultz to play up in the lineup, and we saw him basically a lot with Noah Oslin this weekend. And, you know, beyond the drawing of penalties, and yes, the Amerks did struggle mightily on faceoffs yesterday, which was part of their problem, and Oslin would have been part of it. He was terrific. Kozak was amazing, and Kozak found himself on a line with, you know, in the middle with Yops, who's traditionally a centerman, or has been most of the year, on one side, and Konsta Hellenius on the other. So here's another name to throw into it, in Hellenius. I thought they got, and then Rosean, of course, gets the empty netter. So there were a lot of meaningful contributions, especially when the blue line was banged up as bad as it was, which was Komarov leaving the game after a knockout punch in his fight with Finley. He was on the wrong side of it. And then Metsä took a 10-minute penalty, 10-minute misconduct. So they were really shorthanded on the back line. But they found a way to win it 4-0 and you know, drive the bus to Syracuse in the hopes of ending it on Thursday.
I hope Sevi Komarov is going to be okay. That was a tough fight, and taking that punch, and he was basically knocked out. That wasn't, you know, nice to see, but it happens, and hopefully he's okay. I think Komarov is a really nice blue line prospect for the Buffalo Sabres, who had some success in the Quebec League with Quebec and Drummondville, Memorial Cup, everything, defenseman of the year. So there's a lot of good there. So I hope for him that he can recover and continue his development and his playoff experience. You talk about Konsta Hellenius. He had a nice goal in the slot. You know, he talked in between periods about how, you know, that play is just, it's a battle in front of the net. There's a shot, there's a rebound, you try to get to it. But that he noticed a change from the regular season to the playoffs now. Mm-hmm. And the physicality, the battles, the, you know, puck battles on the wall, puck battles in front of the net. And I think that's great. That's great that a player like Konstantelainis, a young player, first year in the American League, first round pick last year from the Buffalo Sabres, is realizing what is happening in those big moments and trying to elevate his game. Scoring was big for him as well. So that that I was excited about. And yeah, there's a lot of players that maybe right now are not producing and not getting that opportunity. But hopefully over a long playoff, a long spring, some guys will have their moments and be able to produce and step up. Right now, we saw Konsta scored. We saw Jiří scored. Cale Klig, amazing first couple of games. But there's going to be other guys that are going to get there and step up as well.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I think it's a perfect script balance-wise so far for the Amerks based on the 7 consecutive goals that they have scored in the series after falling behind 2-0 on Friday. And Klig is at the forefront of it. He's a 4-point guy through his first 2 playoff games of his career. So great leader from a minutes and clearly production standpoint. And then with Komarov leaving and potentially, obviously it's too early to say, not playing on Thursday, you do have Erik Brännström, who came in at the deadline as the next man up as far as the blue liners are concerned. Unfortunately, veteran Ethan Prowl was injured with 2 games to go in the regular season. He's not able to go and come back in just yet. But obviously, they have the depth there in the form of Brännström. Again, game 3 in the Amerks series, the divisional semifinal, comes up Thursday night in Syracuse. And then, if necessary, game 4 would happen on Saturday. But let's just focus on game 3 at this point in time and see if the Amerks can get it done and take a playoff matchup from Syracuse for the second time in the last 3 years. By the way, it's the only division semifinal that has played in the American League so far. Yeah. All the rest of them had to go through those play-in series and nobody else got started. But I will tell you this, and I was going to save it to the end of the show, but it's only in my mind and not for the audience because nobody else could care less about this. But my best of the weekend and stat forever belongs to Jet Greaves. The Monsters beat the Marlies in overtime, both games, to eliminate Toronto. Jet Greaves is 16-0 lifetime against Toronto. How is that even possible? The Marlies have been good. Who does this?
Anyway, yeah, no, that's almost impossible. Obvious. 16 is a big number. If it was 8-0, it would have been a big number. 9-0, 16 is crazy. But he did have a couple of big wins. And obviously Cleveland, who is 5th in the division, beats Toronto, who is 4th. Mm-hmm. And now they get the chance to play Laval. That series is going to start this week. And hopefully Rochester will get themselves, into the next round and have a little bit of time to heal up and, get ready for whoever they're going to play. So they still have to get that next win, though.
Okay. Toronto. Tampa and Florida.
Oh,
let's get into it. I mean, this is the downside. The only downside of having a long weekend is trying to make sense and articulate the key moments that have happened in all the series so far. Tampa, Florida, they've been disgusting. Hits at times. There has been verbal, just incredible banter and gamesmanship between the coaches. Like, where are you going with all this?
So let's start with what started the weekend discussion was Brendan Hagel hit on Barkov, right? So it's towards the end of the game. Puck is around in the Tampa Bay zone. Barkov is chasing the puck, never touched the puck. And as he's making the turn, Hagel lays a hit on him. And it was 6.5, 7 minutes, maybe 8 minutes left in the game. So Hagel gets a 5-minute major for the hit, which is fine. Clearly, Barkov is injured on the play. I think it should have been a 5 in the game. But the referees went to a quick review. They said, no, 5, that's it. Hagel came back in the game after the major and was on the ice to try to tie the game up on Thursday night, which I was like, what is going on here? So after the game, Paul Maurice, made a quote and saying, we only hit guys that have the puck here in Florida because Barkov never had the puck. Hagel gets a 1-game suspension. I thought that was a little heavy on the 1-game suspension because the 1-game suspension probably was, Barkov is injured and Florida kept playing the game. Barkov's probably not going to play. Barkov is hurt. And then, sure enough, Barkov is playing game three. But Tampa doesn't have Hagel. Like, I thought the one-game suspension was a little heavy, but it was a bad hit. It was definitely it should have been a five in a game. So then we move to game three with Tampa down 2-0, having lost both games at home. And then, you know, Tampa's playing better. Vasi's looking better. Tampa's playing better. And then Gensel, which, by the way, was staring at his pass. Like, you got to look around you a little bit. Although, you know, it was very late. Matthew Tkachuk laid him at the end of the game with an interference call. They gave him a 5 minutes. I get it. No suspension on Matthew Tkachuk. So then it prompted John Cooper to say, we only hit players that have the puck, which was kind of a funny back and forth between Cooper and Maurice. But I didn't even think it was a 5 minute major, but I think because they had called Hagel a 5 minute major, they probably had to give Tkachuk a 5 major on that one. I thought it was sneaky. It was interference. It was kind of like stupid to do it, but there's no suspension there. It wasn't as impactful and as violent as the Hagel on Barkov, so I was good with the call.
My only footnote to all of this or addition to the commentary would be, I really don't want to hear anybody ever say they didn't see what happened on the play ever again.
Like,
because
Tampa?
Anthony Cirelli finished the play, scored the goal, and then turned around and went after Tkachuk. And, like, have some awareness. That's all I'm asking from everybody involved in the game. Have some awareness. This is championship material, Anthony Cirelli. This is what players do when they know something bad has happened. And I loved it.
Some things happen a little faster than others. This one happened so late.
You could still take the time to show interest and know what happened in the play as opposed to waiting until after and telling people you never saw it or have no comment. Like, just show me that you're in the moment, please.
Yeah. So what was interesting in that one is it was 4-1. I was kind of like surprised that Cirelli actually finished the play. Right. I thought he was going to turn right away. And then he's like, nah, let me get my goal. And then I'll turn around and go after Tkachuk. But no suspension. Everybody's saying, hey, tick for tack, right? Like, Hagel goes to one game. Tkachuk needs a one game. They're separate incidents. They're not the same.
What happens tonight? We got to move.
Oh, yeah, we got to move. What happens? Tampa wins tonight. Tampa wins both in Florida, and then it's a 2-2 game, a 2-2 series. That's what happens.
You're Johnny Lightning, so I'm not surprised to hear you say that.
Well, I do like, but I like how the Lightning responded. And now I think they've put Florida on tilt a little bit.
Right, and historically I've been Johnny Lightning too, but I just felt like Florida was going to find a way. And then after the first two games, I was like, oh, this seems like the right assessment, and now I don't know. I honestly don't know what to expect.
Tampa played well in game two. They lost the game 1-0. They just couldn't score, but they played well in that game.
I guess. I guess I was scarred by the terrible goal that ended up being the game winner. You know, I mean,
it wasn't that bad of a goal.
The goal from distance?
Yeah, but if the problem...
Oh my gosh.
On Vasilevskiy, the problem is this. Vasi didn't pick up the pass to Nate Schmidt soon enough, so he overpushed, and then 99% of players in that situation would see, hey, the glove side is open. I'm going to shoot it that way. Nate Schmidt, don't know how. He's got three goals in three games or whatever, you know, but he shot it blocker side, like completely unexpected there.
Okay, good luck with the rest of this. Montreal and Washington, can you compartmentalize this in the next 90 seconds?
Okay, a lot of physicality. I loved on Saturday night when they ended up on the penalty bench, Josh Anderson and Tom Wilson and Spencer Carberry's reaction. It was awesome. But one guy kind of decided, okay, I don't want to get sucked into this, you know, nonsense. I'm going to play the game. And that was Tom Wilson, who had a monster of a game. Most minutes played by any forward on Washington, played the power play, played shorthanded, scored an empty net goal, had the massive hit on Carrier that, you know, turned the game early in the third when Duhaime scored to make it 2-2. Look, Montreal is pushing. Montreal is trying to do their best. But Washington is just a little bit better. And now they don't have Samuel Montembeau, who got hurt in game three, despite the fact that they won that game. If Dobesh was a little nervous, a little shaky in that game last night.
So now what? I mean, do you think Montembeau is out?
I think Montembeau is going to be out. Although they do have until Wednesday for game five. Who knows? Maybe it's supposed to be a day-to-day thing, but I feel like the way he came out and the way he grabbed his leg, that it's probably going to be a little bit longer than that. The one that I was surprised is Logan Thompson. Looked like he broke his leg in five pieces after Dylan Strome ran into him Saturday night, and he's back playing last night. Like, I felt like, that I thought was going to be a lot longer, and he came back. So who knows? Anything is possible.
Washington can clinch on Wednesday on home ice. Toronto can do so tomorrow against Ottawa after dropping game four. Your assessment of what's going on there?
My assessment is the Toronto Maple Leafs had all the opportunities to put that game away. They had a four-minute power play in overtime. They didn't have John Tavares because he was pulled for concussion, and by the time he returned, the power play was over, so they didn't get to use their five forwards power play unit. Morgan Riley went on there. Mm-hmm. But look, Ottawa ends up getting a CNI kind of shot from Jake Sanderson in overtime. Okay, Ottawa got a game, yep. But Toronto was the better team, and Toronto had all the opportunities to sweep, and they just didn't put it in the net.
So no boost. I mean, let's be real here. Ottawa's been in overtime three straight games here with Toronto, yep. But you're claiming wide discrepancy between the two. Does Ottawa feel that way? Should Ottawa feel that way?
Funny enough, like, you would look at the shots on goal, and Ottawa's had more shots on goal every game, and they've created enough. I have more of a comfort right now watching the game since Toronto is the better team. Right. Stolarz is the better goaltender. Like, Ullmark has had his moments, and, you know, but I still look at putting the Toronto Maple Leafs on one side and Ottawa Senators on the other. I'm giving the check marks to Toronto more. And I think this one is going to end on Tuesday at home in Toronto.
Boy, your pick and choose love for members of the goaltender union.
Well, I mean,
undoubtedly leaves many miffed at your, I wouldn't say disdain for their performances.
But it does change really quickly. It can change really quickly.
Yes,
all of a sudden, Tuesday night, and Ottawa win. This is where, like, I've been down 3-1 in a series.
Yes.
And you go on the road for game five, and I'm like, all we got to win a road game. Because then we come back home for game six. We're going to win at home. And then it's game seven and anything can happen. Mm. That's what Marty Saint-Louis said yesterday. He goes, we knew we had to win at least one on the road. Now we have to win two, but we got to start with winning one for game five. So I think Ottawa's saying the same thing. Win one game on the road and then all of a sudden things change.
Goaltending and injuries became a storyline in New Jersey. What's that?
I said, ugh.
Sorry, I heard it.
Let me do it again.
New Jersey and Carolina. So here we are, Carolina on the verge of putting the Devils out, but having to use at least two netminders in the process.
Freddie Anderson was really good in the first 3.5 games, and then he gets banged up by Timo Meier. I didn't think it was that bad of a play by Meier. Meier is trying to stop at the crease. I get Timo Meier is a little bit, you know, on the edge, and he knows what he's doing. He got bumped a little bit by Svechnikov, I believe, or was it Chatfield? I think it's Chatfield on the play. Maybe it was Svechnikov. Anyway, which maybe send him in the crease a little bit more than what he wanted to. It was Svechnikov. We're showing it on MSG right now. And then there's a contact. Freddie Anderson's going forward. Timo Meier's coming in. I didn't think the contact was that bad, but Freddie Anderson's been one that has been injured many, many times. And so he had to leave the game. They called a 5-minute penalty on the play. I thought that was the right call because they wanted to make sure they didn't miss something. With the major, they can review it. And then they probably decided, you know what? Like, what we saw on the ice is what we are seeing in the replay. They rescinded the penalty altogether. They didn't give Timo Meier a penalty at all, which I know I'm a goalie union member, but I think that was the right call. I just feel bad for Freddie Anderson.
Sorry. Silence says it all. I clearly disagree. I can't believe it's not a penalty. This is...
I think I'm in the loud minority. I think most of the majority thinks it was at least a penalty, but I just didn't see it.
Do you think Timo Meier when he was learning how to skate had trouble stopping?
You know that
honestly, Mighty Ducks, guys, the can D2. Stop on a dime, and I think it's a joke that anybody thinks that Timo Meier couldn't stop on that play.
Yeah, well,
come on.
D2, if you've seen the Mighty Ducks, the second one, when they have Team USA, they got that guy from Texas that has a lasso. He skates like the wind, but he runs into the boards every time. He can't stop.
Yes.
That could be Timo Meier. Although, you know, you're trying to do a lot of different things at once. You're going backdoor. You're looking at the play. The puck is going in the crease. You're trying to get in the crease. I think he didn't stop on top of the crease because he knew the puck was getting in the crease. That's where he wanted to go. So he kind of slowed his stopping and got in a little. But it wasn't because he wanted to hit the goalie. I think he wanted to get to the puck to be able to make a play on the puck.
Meanwhile, there was Eastern Conference coaching news today.
Yes.
I fell for whatever report happened last week where it seemed like Kyle Dubas suggested that Mike Sullivan was going to be the Penguins coach. Anyway, he's no longer the Penguins coach, and he's got 2 more years to go on his deal that reportedly pays him over $5 million a year. So that'll be interesting to see what happens for him contractually with his next stop. But now Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, along with Seattle, Anaheim, Chicago, Boston, the New York Rangers, and potentially Vancouver could be in this whole coaching search.
It's 25% of the league almost that's looking for a coach right now. Yep. And that's not even like counting maybe some of the teams that maybe were losing round one and they may make a change or whatnot. The word is Mike Sullivan does not want to take part in a rebuild. I get it. He's been around. He's won a cup. He's been in. He's won two. He's been in Pitt for a while. He's been around the NHL a long time. I think the New York Rangers make a lot of sense for Mike Sullivan because he was an assistant coach there when I played there. He coached Chris Drury. He would be the type of coach that would come in and realize this roster is good and let's make something out of it. He's a good defensive-minded coach in a system and a structure, which that's what the Rangers need right now. So I think he makes a lot of sense there. But if he goes there, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, Rick Tocchet made a lot of sense in New York because of his love affair with JT Miller and all the, you know, comments he made. And JT Miller's fantastic, whatever. Now it, you know, maybe it shifts Rick Tocchet to Philly or elsewhere. Maybe it goes to Pittsburgh. I don't know. But that to me is a big news in the coaching carousel going on.
You know he's from Massachusetts, though. And
he coached in Boston before, yes.
Okay.
What's
the most appealing of all these jobs?
Well, it's not Boston. I'll tell you this right now. So of all these jobs...
Boy, you remember loving Jeremy Swayman?
Yeah, I love Jeremy Swayman. Okay. I don't like their general manager. I don't think he's done really a good job of late. I don't like their roster. I think that you have David Pastrnak and you have Charlie McAvoy, and that's it. Now I get Geeky scored over 30 goals this year, but that's because he was in the right spot at the right time, playing with Pasta and getting goals, and it was great. But I think the New York Rangers, to me, are probably the one that I would say I want to go there because they have Zibanejad, they have Shesterkin, they have Panarin, they have Miller, they have Fox, but he's had a tough season. And then I would go to I probably would go to Vancouver next. But Mike Sullivan's been to Vancouver, he was the assistant of Torts there. I don't see him going back to Vancouver.
All right, we're going to take a break. Reminder that coming up at the end of the month of May, the World Para Ice Hockey Championships coming back to Lecom Harbor Center. This is going to be an unbelievable tournament. And there's great opportunity for the U.S. to have a little revenge against Canada for how last year's Worlds played out. But obviously, the American side has been dominant at the Paralympic Games. And... honestly, this rivalry is so good, and we'll see how it all plays out at Harbor Center between...
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
May 24th to 31st, best sled hockey players in the world. And it's right here in Buffalo, sabres.com/world to purchase your tickets. And we are back after this with the latest on what's next for the Bandits and, of course, what's going on in the West in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Back to hockey talk in a minute, but the Bandits were home on Friday night in a single elimination quarterfinal game and found themselves ultimately involved in the lowest scoring game in the history of the National Lacrosse League. They defeated San Diego 5-4. They scored no goals in the second half. However, after falling behind 2-1, they had a four-goal run in the second quarter that featured some incredible drama, talent, all the rest of it, highlight reel stuff from players we've expected to see it from and some we didn't. And ultimately, Matt Vince had a 48-save effort on 52 shots and somehow got the better of Chris Origliere at the other end. Bandits defeat the Seals 5-4 and now get set for a best-of-three semifinal starting this Friday night at home against Vancouver. Marty?
Incredible that the game-winning goal was scored as time was running out in the second quarter. The diving around the back of the net, just putting the ball in as time was basically expiring. And then they're up 5-2, and then that's it. Like, it was a tight game. I don't think I will ever see another 5-4 game in lacrosse like this, especially in the playoffs, because lacrosse is a high-scoring game. It's a game of runs. You go, you go, you go. You get a goal, keep going. And this was a very tightly contested game, but, man, what a performance by Vincey again to make, to make saves late when your team really needs you, and the number of saves that he made was incredible.
Yeah, and honestly, he was... You don't know how a game is going to go, but I found myself in the first quarter and second quarter thinking, holy cow, like, he is so good from an anticipation standpoint right now of, like, and whether it's, you know, in part advanced scouting and having seen this team twice already this year. And look, these guys all know each other. They play year round in different leagues. I mean, everyone knows everyone. I get that. But Matt Vince was so on top of things. And then he was less than a second away from establishing a new record for goals against. And San Diego scored with less than a second left in regulation to make the final 5-4. It was 5-3. There was a brief moment in time, Marty, where this, from a glass half full standpoint, if it had gone the wrong way, would have been the worst beats ever in the history of lacrosse. They were up 5-3 with a minute to go, empty net staring them in the face. They missed the empty net, and they missed the rebound. They should have extended the possession. Instead, Dylan Robinson, who missed the empty net, takes a major for high sticking. So now they're shorthanded for the final minute. And I'm like...
And they could have scored as many goals as they wanted on the major penalty. So, yeah.
Well, no, it's not that. No, that's not true. But
they don't do that.
But the point is,
can you score multiple goals on the penalty, though? Two. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's so, okay. That's okay.
The player
that's good,
serves the penalty, like, but the manpower disadvantage comes off the board. So
after the second goal.
Yeah.
Okay, because I've seen a five-minute major called, and then one goal getting scored, and then they were still on the penalty kill. So I thought it was the same thing. I didn't know there was a limit to two.
And by the way, they're up against Vancouver, who is on a seven-game win streak. They have not lost since the trade deadline acquisition of Christian Delbianco, who was the 2023 MVP and goaltender of the year. He's only the second goalie ever to win MVP beyond Steve Dietrich, Bandits general manager, and that was in 06. And he, of course, was part of Calgary's championship win against the Bandits in 2019. So there's 15 years between Matt Vince and Christian Delbianco. And yet after watching this weekend and much of this year, like, you're talking about the two best.
They're
in the
two
game.
Best. It's
incredible.
Yeah, it's
incredible.
Hashtag Patrick Waugh going head to head in
Delbianco,
the playoffs.
By the way, like he told Calgary, I'm not playing for you ever again. So he sat there all year. Calgary wasn't going to trade him. They traded him at the deadline to Vancouver, where he wanted to be. Vancouver has not lost since. It's a really crazy story. Just so again, Bandits are home this Friday. Then they will travel to Vancouver on Saturday, but then play on Sunday for game two of the series. And if it needs to go three, it'll be back in Bandit Land a week from this Saturday. So, like, man, it is that's a tough opening two games for both these teams.
Yeah, and in the other series, it's the Rush and the Thunderbirds, and they're going to start one game at the Thunderbird, and then they'll come back for game two and three at the Rush is Saskatoon, right?
Correct.
So they're going to come back Saskatoon for game two and three, despite the fact that they're the highest seed. So a little different there, but, you know, this semifinal, Bandits have game one and game three. They go to Vancouver for game two, but hopefully the Bandits can close it out in two and they don't have to come back for game three.
On to the West in the NHL playoffs. And Gabe Landeskog and the Colorado Avalanche coming back to get their series even at two. Remarkable. Everything. I mean, the only way you could have scripted it differently was if he'd actually had this same impact in his return game, which was game three.
Mm-hmm.
But it matters not. He still delivered it in front of the home fans. It is still going to be a cherished for a championship organization. Multiple championships organization. This, for decades, will be a fan favorite moment for the Colorado Avalanche.
Incredible. Almost 3 years, right? Because the last goal that Gabriel Landeskog had scored was in June in the finals 3 years ago. And then he ends up getting a goal in the second game. He didn't score in the American League when he played for the Colorado Eagles. And then, you know, but his first game, I felt like he had a good impact. He was physical in game three, the first game that he was back, but didn't really handle the puck all that much and whatnot. And then they moved some of the lines around. He gets in, gets a goal. Mackenzie Blackwood was really good in net for the Colorado Avalanche, who I was surprised. Look, no Jason Robertson for Dallas. No Miro Heiskanen for Dallas. I was surprised that the Stars were that good in game two and three to bounce back and take, you know, the lead in the series. But if Colorado can play the way that they did in game four, this will end in two more games. Like, they were that much better than Dallas. Dallas didn't have an answer. Now, we'll see what happens if Miro Heiskanen is going to be back and Jason Robertson, what's going to happen there. But if it plays out the same way, Colorado is the better team, in my opinion.
They play tonight. What happens?
I say Colorado wins this tonight and then they win at home. It's weird to me that Colorado didn't have home ice advantage. I feel like they're the better team. But the standings were that Dallas had almost got themselves above Winnipeg, only to lose seven in a row to end the season and then lose game one. I think Colorado wins tonight and wins game six at home.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you mention the Jets? My final words of our last show last week were, let's go Blues.
Go Blues.
And thank you, St. Louis, for evening the series.
You,
and in convincing manner.
Yeah.
Like, thrashed the Jets over two occasions.
You did Brett Hall in the drunk Stanley Cup parade. We went Blues. So you went Blues big time. But yes, this is, okay, Duffer. It comes down to one individual and one individual only, and it's Connor Hellebuck.
Really?
Connor Hellebuck was not good in game three, was not good in game four, got pulled in both games. Over the last three playoffs, Duffer, and Shayna's buddy Dom had that on X. Over the last three playoffs, who is the worst goalie in the National Hockey League? In when you look at the numbers, goals save above expectation.
Well, you're going to tell us that it's the Vezina likely winner.
So. It's Connor Hellebuck. Most people would have said Stuart Skinner, right? Stuart Skinner, but Stuart Skinner. So it's basically Connor Hellebuck and Stuart Skinner are the worst two goalies in the last three playoffs. But Connor Hellebuck is another step behind Skinner. Like, Skinner has given up, I think, 11 more goals than he should have. Connor Hellebuck's given up 15 more goals than he should have. And we thought last year, like, oh, he played Colorado, boo. Okay, sorry, Connor, you're going to be better. Connor Hellebuck, I actually didn't think I played that bad last year against Colorado. And it's been bad. He looks off. He looks slow. He looks like his feet are in cement. And St. Louis is finding ways around him. And it's been the difference.
St. Louis was very competitive in the first two games in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Definitely feel like they should have taken the first game based on how long they led and how late the comeback came from Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. But 12-3, they outscored the Jets over the last two games. Anyway, Vasilevsky, Kemper, and Hellebuck, your finalists for the Vezina this year.
Kemper is having a tough go in that series with the Oilers. They're tied at two, but he's given up a lot of goals.
Well, so is Hellebuck, by the way. He's tied
Hellebuck,
at two.
Tied at two, yeah. Giving up a lot of goals. And Vasilevsky, after game one, it was like, ooh, Vasi. So after four games tonight, we'll get to see if those three are giving up a lot of goals. I don't anticipate it for Vasi, but we'll see.
Do you think, though, home ice just gets the Jets right back on track, or are you actually concerned for Winnipeg at this point?
I'm concerned for Winnipeg.
Are you?
I'm concerned for Winnipeg. You know that Jordan Binnington in game 5, 6, and 7 of his career is 10-2. And Jordan Binnington has been a part of five playoff series when after four games, they're tied at two. He's won all five of them.
Right. But what has he done for anyone lately?
Well, he won Team Canada, Four Nations face-off.
Yeah.
And it's not like Jordan Binnington is stealing games right now. I think there's still that's coming up.
Got field goals and touchdowns.
Exactly.
With great regularity.
They just missed an extra point. But yes, but I think Jordan Binnington is going to win one of the three games left. So now, all of a sudden, it's dicey for Winnipeg.
So we mentioned Darcy Kemper. He's a Vezina finalist. This is not anything to do with Darcy Kemper, I don't think. Especially last night. Like, I mean, he was so good in overtime. But here's a problem for LA. They've given up 11 third period goals.
Mm-hmm.
Already in a four-game series. Like, Edmonton has twice as many third period goals as anybody else in the playoffs right now.
Where do we put the blame? I'm going to blame Jim Hiller and the LA Kings coaching staff in the fact that, so Friday night is game three, the first game in Edmonton. The LA Kings are up 4-3 after two periods. They give up a goal to make it 4-4. Evander Kane scores, and Jim Hiller and the coaching staff decides to challenge for goalie interference. It was a terrible challenge. 10 seconds later, Evan Bouchard scores the second of the game on the power play. That's a game-winning goal. So I'm saying that was on the coaching staff. Now, last night in game four, the LA Kings are up 3-1 after two periods. And, like, call a timeout at some point in the third period because the Edmonton Oilers are rolling over. They're rolling. They have the puck. The Kings are not doing anything. Call a timeout. Settle your team down. Like, this is a big game. You can be up 3-1 going back home. Instead, you get a goal, and then you get, Evan Bouchard that scores to tie it with 30 seconds left. I get Ellie miss an empty net. They went, you know, a couple of feet wide. And Quentin Byfield's got to make a better play, trying to get the puck out of the zone. Bouchard keeps it in, keeps the play alive. They score. But from the start of the third, all the way until the Edmonton Oilers scored in OT, the Kings never touched the puck. They never had the puck. I say Jim Hiller needed to take a timeout and settle the guy, even in overtime. Take a timeout. Settle things down. Like, it was getting a little too fast for the Kings.
All right, quick break. Maybe Minnesota-Vegas. Maybe when we come back on Sabres Live.
Maybe.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, Marty. Precious time we are into. Do you have a correction to make?
I have a correction to make, and thank you to Cause on X, who lets me know that it was Luis Mendoza who couldn't stop in the Mighty Ducks 2. It wasn't Dwayne Robertson, the guy with the lasso. So I am sorry that for all the fans of Mighty Ducks, I messed it up. You're right. I got to watch that movie again. I got to get my info correct. It wasn't the lasso guy. It was Luis Mendoza who couldn't stop.
Well, the one thing you can always count on me for is to never chime in when there's a movie reference. So at least that streak continued today.
But I was convincing enough to let everybody know that it could have been the lasso guy, but it wasn't. But still, it was very convincing.
I just smile and agree usually. Best and worst of the weekend?
Best of the weekend. I'll tell you this. You know what I bought over the weekend? I bought a lawn roller.
Oh,
a big roller, and I rolled my lawn, and it was a little misty, rainy, and so the grass is a little soft, and I rolled my lawn, and now today I'm going to go and cut the lawn and see if I'm bouncing on my lawnmower or if I'm going really smooth. So best, it could be best, could be worse, I don't know, but the lawn roller it was.
We got a dashboard cam on your mower so we can reenact what you just did.
Oh, you know what was worst of the weekend? I was watching the Bison on cable, and it was so windy that the center field, like, camera was shaking. Like, oh, no. That was like, they need to roll their lawn at the Bisons for the camera to stay smooth.
As you know, I don't watch a lot of baseball anymore, but you'll be happy to know that something that warmed my heart entered my feed late last night, and that was the Giants' Little League walk-off home run to win. We'll see you tomorrow on Sabres Live.